Blog Talk Radio. Today is Thursday, November 3rd, 2016, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Happy Thursday to you. I hope your day is going well for you so far. And I've got a bit of a head cold today, but here I am hanging in there. And I've also been trying to get this show up and aired all week. So finally, here we are. As they say, let's do this, right? The show must go on. Can't let a little cold get in the way or minor glitches that I had this week. So show must go on. But you know what? Sometimes you just got to push past things. You know, what I just described are basically very small things. You know, they say don't sweat the small stuff. But, you know, that's not always the case. Many times larger, heavier, and darker issues do loom. But somehow we have to find a way past all of that stuff, too. My guest today has had to do just that. She's had a hard journey, one she calls a journey of darkness, dealing with childhood sexual abuse and the painful loss of a parent. She's 18, but she is so much wiser in her years. And she's in the process of turning that pain into something positive with her new book, A Newfound Legacy. Welcome, Alana Gorski.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad to be talking to you today. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine. Ready to do a talk show with you. Well, you know what I would like to do, kind of coming out of the gates. You've written this book, and you really are a very young woman. Not that people don't write books at earlier ages than you, but I'd like for you to talk about the book first, Alana. I mean, you obviously felt that that was a way to express the journey that you've been through. And I know oftentimes people will write a book because it's also a purging. It's also a healing that goes along with your book. What was it for you?
For me, it was just kind of a gut instinct one day to chase this dream that always came up in my life. From the time I was 7, I started journaling seriously and thinking about maybe one day writing a book. I think I was going to call it The Life of a Military Brat when I was little. And about 9-10 months ago in February, I decided that I was going to go for it and reach out. And then I wrote the book in 5 months with honestly no clear reason to doing it at first. And then it turned into not only a healing journey, but me gaining my wings and turning that tragedy into a passion.
Yes, yes. And so when did it hit you? You said you didn't start out that way, but when did it hit you in your writing that I need to tell my story because it's going to help others?
That was always kind of the main motive, but it hit me more towards the middle of the writing that it was also going to be healing for me, because I only came out about my sexual abuse 13, 14 months ago. So it hadn't mm-hmm. been very long. And I didn't really know how to handle it. But when I started writing, I realized that that was my way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. What have you been doing to help get your message out, the message of your book, and to empower others? What have you been doing to? I know you're, of course, on the air with me today, and I'm glad because I really have my deeper thoughts and feelings about this particular issue, and actually appreciate people like you who come on the air and want to share your story, because you know that it really is all too common. It's a hidden thing in most homes, and a lot of women grow up and become even older women, and it's still a deep, dark secret. So I'm really glad that you're here. But what are you doing? Are you going out on the speaking circuit yet?
I have a few speaking engagements that are in the lineup, but I've also done a live TV interview that's on YouTube with the Tucson Morning Blend. I've done a couple of radio interviews, and then I primarily use Facebook as my outreach, and I do videos, mm-hmm. and those will soon be on YouTube.
Okay. What's the topic and title of the YouTube videos?
They are basically all the videos that I've done on Facebook, and then I'm going to be doing a Back to My Roots movie, which is a tour that I did, a small tour, just going to say thank you to the unsung heroes who changed my path from being a troubled kid with no purpose to where I am today.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the beginning of all of this, Alana. I'm happy to know that you are triumphing in your journey. Congratulate you for that and praise you for that, because I know it is not easy. But why don't we start with the first part, the difficulty you faced as a very young person with the sexual abuse. When did that start, and are you at liberty to share who your abuser was?
Absolutely. In the book, I did not hide any of that. The sexual abuse started, I believe, 10 years ago this Christmas. It would have been probably around the 26th or 27th of December of 2006. And my abuser was my heterosexual female aunt. And she had always had a bit of spite towards my family, my mom, my stepdad, my sister, whoever else. And so she got mad at me once. She was making us clean the house like slaves. And she, for some reason, I couldn't do a task or didn't know where something was. So she picked me up off my feet, brought me into a bedroom, locked the door, and pulled my pants down and started hitting me. And I don't even know how many times I was hit. I was probably hit 15 or 20 times. And then she stuck her finger up and sexually abused me.
So she was actually beating you, is what you're saying, and then the sexual assault part of it was a type of manipulation. Did I hear that right?
A bit of both. It was kind of the end of the punishment, as she called it. But then she said that it would get worse if I continued to mess up, even though I didn't really mess up.
Okay. Was that a one-time event, or what did it continue to happen?
No, it was, we don't really know the exact number, honestly. It's probably somewhere in the double digits, because my dad lived with her, and when he would go away, I lived here in Washington State, and they lived in the southern part of the U.S., and he would go to work, and then she would typically do it whenever she got mad at me or for some reason felt like I didn't do something or wasn't adequate. But then would threaten, she threatened to kill my mom with an AK-47, and she brought out what I later learned was a shotgun, but at 7 didn't know that wasn't an AK-47.
So what was the reason, Alana, that you did not expose her to your parents, other than just recently? What was the reason you didn't? Did she have you in fear? Is that what you're suggesting?
It was a few different factors. I have mild autism, which makes it hard for me sometimes to connect with an emotion. So if there's something like that where it's really difficult, sometimes my body will actually just totally block out the memory until it's triggered by something. Also about that fear, but by 15, I realized that she really couldn't do anything. So talk about the physical stuff where that was, I guess, easier not to have to connect with team, and I watched a documentary by Aaron Marin on TLC, I had realized, hey, that is sexual abuse because it was a female. So there was nothing out there that told me that that could be done like that.
And this continued until your teen years?
Until I was 9, and then that's when my dad got diagnosed with cancer. And instead of going there to visit him, he would come to us.
Could you repeat what you just said? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
It continued from 7 to 9 when we would visit him on school breaks. And then when he got diagnosed with cancer, instead of going there to visit him where his sister lived, he would come up to visit where we lived.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, we're going to get to dealing with the pain of losing your dad. But I want people to learn a little bit more about the other situation before we shift gears. What happened, in the last year, year and a half, when you exposed this whole situation? I can't imagine that had. I'm thinking that must have been terribly uncomfortable revelation for everybody.
For my mom, it was more something that they suspected because when I was little, they thought it was my uncle that sexually abused me. So they actually did do rape kits on me, but nothing showed up because it was a finger. Then for my grandmother, who is my abuser's mom, that I still have contact with, I have no contact with my abuser herself. She didn't want to believe it, and she actually wanted me to hide it from the rest of the family. But I knew that that wasn't an option because all at that point but them knew about it. So for me, it was honestly more freeing, and I didn't really care what they thought. And one of my aunts actually is very supportive of it and is thrilled that I'm doing this.
I imagine that really severed the relationship. What was her response to you after you revealed this?
Her response was kind of muted. I don't think she wanted to believe it. I still don't think she does. But we actually maintain a relatively close relationship, and I know that's kind of weird, but I just don't discuss it with her because I know that she didn't do it, and there's nothing that she could have done to stop it, nor could my dad have. So I just try to move on.
I was actually referring to the abuser.
Oh, yeah, no, we have no contact at all. Haven't since I was 10.
Were there any legal actions taken or did you file any charges? Did your parents do that? Or did you guys just decide that this is going to stop right now and we're going to move forward, sever the relationship? Was there no legal processes involved?
There may be in the future, but it's a bi-state case. So we have reported it to CPS. But unfortunately, the statute of limitations that was in place in California, it would have expired. But since the memory is barely complete, they're saying that after January 1st of 17, there's an unlimited statute of limitations. So after that, I may consider doing something.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you certainly are a very courageous young woman, and you talk with such a great level of confidence, and I'm again just very appreciative of the fact that you can be so open about what has happened, and I know your motive is truly to help other girls and boys and women and men expose the abuser and find help and healing on the other side of this issue as well. So would you say, Alana, that you're successfully reaching that point where you are feeling more whole? I know you describe your journey as one of darkness. Do you feel like you're walking into the light yet?
Oh, I felt like I've been there since the book came out because it was a bit nerve-wracking because I got a little personal with some stuff. But then once it was out and I started to have people come to me and say, wow, you're amazing, you're inspiring. Or when I did the thing in Arizona this year where people were saying that they were proud of me, it was liberating because I finally felt like I could accept a compliment instead of just criticism.
Again, just give you praise for being strong enough to share your story in such a courageous way. Let's talk about your dad in the process of all of this. He was diagnosed with cancer and you lost him, and I know you referenced that as a part of this journey as well. Tell us about that.
My dad was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer on December or something, like late December of 2007. And, well, we found out in like the 3 days before Christmas, but he was diagnosed in November. And my mom decided, and my stepdad and him decided that instead of me going to visit him there, my sister and I, that he would come to us because they didn't want a negative association with our dad. Even though there had been a past of tumultuous events, they wanted us to be able to remember him for the man that he truly was. And then about 6 months after diagnosis, they did a PET scan and it revealed two brain tumors that had been misdiagnosed for nearly a decade as mental illness.
And how did you guys handle that? How did you move forward when that was discovered?
My dad was just very honest with us about it. And that's actually where the premise of the book came from, which is humility, grace, and forgiveness. It was at that point that he apologized for his rages due to the tumors and apologized for not catching some of the signs. And he also apologized for what he felt like wasn't being a real dad. At 8 and 10, as we were, we realized that time really doesn't matter. If the person sets an example and apologizes and truly means what they're saying, then no matter if it's 4 months or 2 years, it's enough time to make amends.
Mm-hmm. That is for sure. You mentioned that there were some tumultuous times. Was there something specific that you're referencing when you say that? Was there some challenge in the relationship with you?
Well, my mom was actually forced to divorce my dad by the courts due to what they thought was mental illness that made him unsafe. She would have lost us to the foster care system if she hadn't divorced my dad. So, because his fits of rage would go from just swearing to throwing things not at us, just like at the wall or whatever. And he did hit us a few times, but all of a sudden, like when he'd pop out of it, he'd be like, "What the frick just happened to me? Like, why am I like this? I don't know why. Why don't they believe me?" And my mom really couldn't do anything because the courts were saying that if she didn't divorce him, then we were gone.
So it was that severe, though. So you guys grew up in an environment where that was a continuous type of happening in your home until your dad
really
realized there was...
My mom separated from him when I was like 5. So she raised us as a single parent until she married my stepdad. And then he kind of stepped in for whatever my biological father was lacking and raised us as his own.
Mm-hmm. So you had some good support at that time to help you. Well, losing a parent is, I don't care what the relationship is, it's a challenging thing. So you felt, you mentioned something that another thing I think is very courageous, that you can always make amends. So I, hearing you say that you felt like you made peace with your dad before you lost him.
Yes, absolutely. And it's only 21 days away. He passed away on what's going to be Thanksgiving this year. And we always do something to celebrate him. And last year we went to a professional soccer game. We've done the Space Needle up in Seattle. We've gone to his hometown before. We feel like that's a day to celebrate the man who he became instead of how he passed away.
Yeah, yeah. And that makes, it sure makes for a much better healing in the heart when you do look at it that way. And I suppose particularly in your case where a misdiagnosis created all of that havoc, and that part of it is really very unfortunate, that perhaps he could have had a much happier and fuller life if the diagnosis had been discovered, many years ago. And, you know, I guess they're still making advances in the sciences, and so we can't say what we think should happen because we're not doctors. But I'm sure things like that bring an alert to the medical profession that maybe mental illness isn't just, you know, not being wired right. You know, maybe it's other things that could be going on in the brain, and that has to be looked at much more closely. And so let's as we start to wrap, Alana, talk about, tell me in your own words, again, what you feel you hope to accomplish with this book. And as you go forward, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of big things ahead for you to talk about and share in groups and on speaking platforms. Tell me about some of the things you really hope will happen, or and maybe you even have a story or two now from people who have appreciated what you're doing.
My goal is to break the stigma surrounding child abuse by allowing the reader to connect with the emotion before actually knowing the full extent of the story. My book is written in basically two parts with a tail end of a third. The first part is poetry and letters and journalism to kind of get the reader connected with the individual issues, but not the story as a whole. I then told the story in chronological order as it played out to allow the reader to understand how it can happen and when. And then I finished the book with some testimony. There was a college paper that a friend of mine wrote, and so there's a letter as well. I just wanted people to really connect with the issue, because you can't break the stigma until someone's passionate enough about it to want to take action, because without passion, there's no action. And then I was able to recently say thank you to the people, like I said, who changed my path, and two old teachers, one in Arizona, one here. A mentor, my publisher, and my publisher in person, as well as a group director of a grief group that helped us out. And I actually donated part of my first royalty check to them.
Mm-hmm. You said, who was that support team that you're speaking of?
Well, one of them was
a teacher and a mentor.
Math and science teacher. Yeah, my seventh grade math and science teacher. My amazing mentor, Jody, who's also a published author, my publisher. And then there was a grief group in Arizona called Tunedito in Tucson. You guys can look them up. They're an amazing organization. They help families with either someone with cancer, parent, child, whatever, or parents or families that are grieving the loss of a loved one. And they helped through my dad's journey with cancer. And after he passed away, they basically showed us that grief is normal and that it's okay to connect. And we had so many friends in the group who had the same experience. So it wasn't like we were the only kid in the class who had lost a parent.
Right. Alana, something I didn't ask you is that there are a lot of negative behaviors before you started to realize you needed to get this help from these mentors, and before you wrote your book, were you acting out in any particular way? And I'm asking that again, too, because a lot of times young women, young men don't realize how emotionally deeply they've been hurt, and it comes out in some other types of negative, even violent behaviors. Did you experience that? Alana?
Kept me very busy as a young child. And so I never had time to physically lash out, but I did shut down.
So when you say you shut down, you isolated yourself?
I stopped practicing my instrument, which I play two. I didn't want to train for my sport, which is swimming. I didn't want to hang out with my friends. I felt like no one cared, and my mom just started to notice this after I came out to her about the sexual abuse. So her threat was, you can't swim your senior year if you don't go get help. And I was legitimately angry, but then when I got help, I realized why she made that threat.
The last thing you said.
When I got help, I did realize that she made the threat of not letting me swim my senior year for a very good reason.
Yes, yes. Well, I'll tell you, you have a very compelling story, and I know that you are really going to be that strength and inspiration to a lot of people. You rarely hear anybody come out talking about the fact that their abuser was female, so that in itself may shed light on another and broader area of this being a problem. And again, I congratulate you, Alana, for your success, and certainly look forward to seeing you making a difference in the world. Can you tell people the best way to connect with you?
The best way to connect with me is my Facebook page, which is at The Newfound Legacy, one word, but with a capital T, a capital N, and a capital L. I get messages there pretty often. I've even gotten one from someone I ran into at an airport who was inspired by my story. Feel free to interact with that page. You can post things. I would love to hear about your stories or something that about my story that changed your perspective or anything like that. I love hearing back from people. It's the best part of what I do.
That's excellent. What would be your last message to people who may be afraid to come out?
I would say if it's a kid, I would say that the bad people who are hurting you aren't right. They may tell you that you shouldn't come out, you shouldn't talk, but they're wrong. You need to listen to your heart and follow your heart. Find an adult, even in public, anywhere that you can find an adult who can help you, talk to them. And then for someone who's older, I would just say it's okay to understand what happened, because without understanding what happened and connecting with all of your emotions, you're never going to be able to move on. And especially someone like me, no matter what you have, whether it's anxiety, autism, depression, it's going to make it harder, but it doesn't make it impossible.
I love that. Doesn't make it harder, but it's not impossible. Well, thank you again for being my special guest. Really enjoyed talking to you, and many blessings to you in the future. And I hope you have a really wonderful day as well. Thank you, Alana. And you take care
thank
of yourself.
You. You as well.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And I want to thank all of you for hanging in there with me today. I appreciate you, and would love it if you would share with others about Foxology today and let them know that I have some shows that are truly empowering, very positive, upbeat. Doria is a tough one, but our message here is that it's not impossible to get past your pain. I want to thank you again for listening, and tell people again about Foxology today. I hope you have an amazing day. Be good, be blessed, be awesome.